next phase of this SDAP appeal. I think we were going to cross-examination of Dr. Cook next. Yes. Oh, yeah, if you are tired, you can, I mean, if
it's not tired, it's just the titanium.
You certainly, there's no requirement that you stand up there. You can sit down there if
that's okay,
if need be. But, so again, your name for after you get situated.
I'm good.
Okay. Again, your name for the record.
Sarah Spear Cook.
And you remain under oath.
I do.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Dr. Cook. Dr. Cook, you said that you did review. Did you say that you did review all 35 exhibits that were attached to your report?
I did.
And did you specifically review the Wetland Fish, Wildlife, and Habitat report of Jeremy Downs and Soundview from 2014? August.
Oh, the original one. Yes, I did.
You did. Okay. And did you review the most recent report by Jeremy Downs?
2017.
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Okay. And did you, are you a licensed professional engineer?
No, I am not.
You're not. Okay. So how could you comment with regard to water flows without being in the capacity of an engineer and having not seen the site?
Because I spent 10 years working on the Puget Sound Wetlands and Stormwater Management Research Program, and have both assisted in teaching and taken HSPF modeling classes, and I work with engineers all the time to model stormwater for how it will potentially impact the wetlands in the projects that I work on. So I know how the models work. I help develop the models. I help collect the field work. So although I am not licensed to do that, I know more than enough to make myself dangerous.
But you haven't been to the site either, correct?
No, I have not been to the site.
Okay. You said that you were denied access to the Yulin Tree Farm. Is that right?
That's correct.
Weren't you scheduled to meet with Mark Morin and me, actually, on site in 2015, prior to the SEIS appeal hearing?
That's what you folks said in one of your rebuttal documents, but I went back to my notes, and Jack and I both tried to recollect, and I have no mention of that, and all I had in my notes was that I was denied access.
Okay, so if Mark Morin testifies that he was there with me that morning, and that while we were there waiting for you with consultants, you called and canceled that meeting, you would have no recollection of that?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. Have you asked to meet with Yulin Tree Farm on site on any other time?
No, not in any other time.
So you have made any effort at all to try to gain access to perform a site visit?
No, not since 2015.
Okay. Then if that's the case, how can you say you were denied access when you've never asked for access and never had a meeting on site?
We did ask for access back in 2015 during the SEIS.
Do you have any written or other documentation that would identify when you did that?
No. Mr. Stanfield did it for me.
So you never did it yourself?
No. I'm working for a client.
Okay. Then no further questions.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but
the county has nothing.
Okay, all right. So, anything for redirect from the?
No, Madam Executive.
Okay, all right. I believe you're done then.
Thank you. My niece, but, thank you too.
Madam Alexander, we may call her up to rebut, you know, whatever their experts say. But yeah,
yeah, yeah. Understood.
So, no, you're not done.
Done for right now, anyway. And does the appellant, do you have any other witnesses? Oh, no. Okay. All right.
So the county will go next, and we will call Jennifer Lawrence and Steve Peacock as planners who reviewed. Jennifer reviewed the stormwater. Mr. Peacock reviewed the soils and wetland stuff. I will point out that the ratings issues and some of the mitigation plan Steve will be able to address. But those are purely challenges to the critical areas ordinance in Title 19. Mm-hmm. They don't come in Title 12. There's not an issue, and they'll testify to that. So Jennifer is very well versed in our code. So I'm just going to let her speak, and if there's anything else, I'll follow up with questions.
Okay.
I'm Jennifer Lawrence. I'm the stormwater management technician.
Oh. Okay, and you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes, I do. So the appellants brought up the portions of Title 12, 1210, 070, 080, and 090. I just want to talk about those for just a minute.
Okay.
So 1210, 070 for the downstream analysis, the code citation requires a field investigation of the drainage study area and evaluates potential adverse impacts of a development. The analysis is included in the engineered drainage report and was prepared by a licensed professional engineer as required at DCD Exhibit 8 and was reviewed and accepted. And 1210-080, the geotechnical analysis. This citation requires a geotechnical analysis to evaluate soils, slopes, and make construction recommendations. There's a code reference, that code references seepage, potential slip planes, and changes in soil bearing strength, which we generally apply when there is a detention or infiltration pond in proximity to steep slopes. This SDAP at hand does not have such facilities. The geotechnical report was prepared by a licensed professional geotechnical engineer or licensed geologist as required and was reviewed and accepted. And then 1210-090, the soils analysis. This citation requires a soils investigation report to be included with the SDAP. Soils investigation report is defined in the code at 1208-110-66 and requires soil characterization by a qualified soils engineer or geologist. And a soils engineer is further defined in item 67 of that definition. The soils engineer is a practicing engineer licensed as a PE, professional engineer. This information was provided by the licensed professional engineer as required and was reviewed and accepted, and that's also in DCD Exhibit 8. The geotechnical report is in Appendix B, I believe. So I looked at those reference code citations during the review and found the SDAP submittal adequate for stormwater review, and Steve Peacock reviewed the SDAP as well for adequacy for critical areas requirements. When construction is proposed near a wetland, the SDAP is also reviewed for compliance with that portion of the stormwater code and manual that is regarding wetlands, and that's Chapter 8 and Chapter 10. The code and manual require review and concurrence by a qualified habitat biologist. The biologist makes recommendations, which the engineer incorporates into the civil design. That's in the County Stormwater Manual, Chapter 8, Wetlands Protection, and County Stormwater Manual, Chapter 10, Critical Areas, Section 10.2. The recommendations were so made by SoundView, and the engineer incorporated them in the design, and the habitat biologist concurred with the design. That's DCD Exhibit 6, the SoundView memo of December 4th, 2017. Anything else, Issue?
Dr. Cook mentioned that the impacts would be greater if the buffers were greater, but as far as the stormwater analysis goes, do the buffers of a wetland impact your stormwater review?
In this case, no, the road alignment was already existing and the CUP revision required use of that road alignment as being the least impact, so the road's already within the buffer. This road section provided dispersion, which was another of the requirements of the CUP revision wherever possible. And so it did grade out the 10 feet required for the dispersion. I'm sure the engineering expert can talk more about that. So in this case, it did not make any difference. If you were starting from scratch, obviously, you first want to avoid impacts and you'd put the road elsewhere. But in this case, the road was already there.
Dr. Cook also talked about surface water flows and claimed that those were inadequately studied. In your stormwater view, how did you address those?
So part of the stormwater review is to look at the upstream drainage basin that comes through the site. In this case, there's the two 18-inch culverts, one of which had the HK and the other one that didn't, but all of which were reviewed by Fish and Wildlife and tribes and various other experts, and also analyzed by the engineer in the drainage report. There's culvert conveyance calculations within the drainage report, Exhibit 8, that address that, the surface water flows through the culverts.
So one last question, similar on the groundwater. Dr. Cook claimed that the groundwater recharge was not adequately addressed. What did you find in your stormwater review?
Again, in the stormwater drainage report, there is a section on groundwater recharge. It's in regards to minimum requirement number 5, which is on-site stormwater management, which requires all projects that have 2,000 square feet or more of newer replaced hard surface to maintain the annual average groundwater recharge, and the calculations within the drainage report were designed to demonstrate that and were reviewed and accepted.
So to be fair to say that in your stormwater review, did you find any concerns that it didn't meet our stormwater ordinance or stormwater manual?
No, no concerns.
That's all we have from Ms. Lawrence, unless you have stormwater questions.
Okay. Is there any cross from the appellants?
Yes. Ms. Lawrence, you testified that the road is already there. Is that right?
Yes, I think I said it's an existing road.
But isn't this project enlarging the footprint of that existing road?
The whole road section that includes the dispersion, the replanting area, is being enlarged somewhat, and the width of the road may be widened somewhat.
Okay. Do you dispute Dr. Cook's testimony that there has been a failure to consider high water events and back-to-back storm events?
I can't speak to any wetland issues. I'm not a wetland expert at all. The stormwater calculations that I looked at were regarding the required 100-year conveyance event, which was provided in the drainage report.
Okay. Do you dispute Dr. Cook's testimony that there's been a failure to consider the likelihood and severity of a road washout?
Again, I'm not a soils expert either, but the drainage report and the construction stormwater pollution prevention plan both talk about the soils and the requirement for erosion control, and the stormwater pollution prevention plan, that's the SWIP, has best management practices to prevent erosion, and then the road construction itself, of course, will meet the compaction requirements.
But is there anything in all that about washouts?
I don't know if that term is used.
Okay. And my final question, you mentioned that you felt like impacts to groundwater were already adequately considered in some of the reports. Can you provide us a citation in the record so that we can check that? I don't know if I heard that.
So that's groundwater recharge for stormwater purposes as required by minimum requirement number 5, just to clarify. And it's in the drainage report, which is DCD Exhibit 8. And I think it might be at page 19. Hang on. Well, it looks like this.
Okay. was that indeed DCD Exhibit?
Exhibit 8, yes.
And page 19, you said it was?
Yeah, this is labeled page 16 and 17, but I'm not sure. Yeah, it is labeled page 16 and 17.
Okay. Are you aware of any other places where groundwater impacts have been considered?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, as I understand it, you're citing to DCD Exhibit 8 for the proposition that, you know, we have considered all of the impacts to the groundwater recharge area. Is that correct?
Actually, what I'm talking about is the, for stormwater review, the requirement for minimum requirement number 5 is to maintain the annual average groundwater recharge for projects that construct 2,000 square feet or more of new or replaced impervious surface.
I see.
I'm not speaking further on the groundwater issue, just limited to that.
Okay. Are you aware, though, of any other groundwater analysis elsewhere? And it's fine if the answer is no.
I would have to do some research. I'm not remembering off the top of my head.
Thank you. No further questions.
Can you redirect?
No, I think we're good. Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. Peacock. Can you use this mic? Yeah, it's fine. I think.
I think that one, that microphone is all that you need.
Can you hear me all right on this mic?
Are we picking up? That's the main thing.
I think so. Yeah? I'm kind of loud, so.
Okay, so Mr. Higgins will talk about some of the wetland issues. We're not going to get into the CAO impacts because those haven't been alleged, but he will talk generally and respond to Dr. Cook's comments on that and the planting.
Right.
So again, your name for the record?
Steve Heacock, environmental planner.
And you swear to tell the truth?
I do.
Great.
Thank you. So in the revised conditional use permit, there was a preferred alternative that had been landed upon, had been analyzed, and looked over extremely carefully, if you will, in relation to the wetland impacts and the fact that there is an existing roadway that looked like the absolute best alternative for a roadway to be placed. Yes, there are adjacent wetlands. The wetlands themselves, though, were analyzed, and it's really the only one particular wetland, wetland E, that we should really be focusing on here in relation to any type of impact in this. In this area, wetland E, the particular buffer requirement on wetland E had already been looked at, analyzed in that revised conditional use permit, analyzed and addressed in the final supplemental environmental impact statement, was addressed, asked and answered, appealed, and then upheld for consistency with that. And so when we received this phase of the application, we reviewed everything in relation to that particular project and found everything in compliance with that project. Yes, the road is a bit wider, but there will be restoration that will occur in those areas. The habitat management plan and then the supplemental mitigation report that was provided on December 4th, as we had asked for that because we had not originally received that document. So when we first reviewed the technical memorandum, if you will, I've got that here. Thank you. When we reviewed the technical memorandum dated May 30th and then asked for additional information, that was one of the items that we just wanted to make sure we had a mitigation plan. We knew what the mitigation was going to occur. And then finally, we required a performance bond and performance bonds are always asked for in our review protocol for site development activity permits. The protocol is to have the actual performance bond provided at the time, but we wanted the estimate of the performance bond to be provided. So the applicant asked his consultant to put that together. They put that together. We reviewed that document and found it met our requirement for review purposes, and therefore we approved that particular document. One of the things I could discuss very briefly in relation to the additional review we completed in relation to the geotechnical report was that environmental staff do also review geotechnical reports, because that is another component of the critical area ordinance. So we did review the geotech report. We found the soils to be both Neilton and Norma in this phase of the project. The other soil types from the report that were discussed previously in this hearing are not soil types that are part of this project. So they are out of the scope of this project. We have in place Neilton gravelly sandy loam. The erosion hazard is slight. Norma fine sands and silty sands, Norma soils are also have a slight erosion hazard. And again, in our review, we do like to take a look at those aspects of the geotech report relating to hydrogeology and aquifer recharge. And another component of an environmental review is the aquifer recharge, and it's part of actually Title 19600, where we have aquifer recharge. In this particular case, we have a CARA 2 aquifer recharge area. So we do look at that, but I will point that roadways are not a concern in Kitsap County aquifer recharge review procedures. A roadway is not a CARA 2 concern. And so in relation to aquifer recharge, it's not an item. I'll relay some of the items that would be a concern. Hazardous and industrial waste, gas stations, dry cleaners, photo processors, laundromats, large-scale use of storage or use of pesticides, insecticides, junk and salvage yards. There's a rather comprehensive list that's in our critical area ordinance. And this I've taken from the applicable code of the critical area ordinance that this whole project rests upon, which is the critical area ordinance. And this document I have is my original copy when I first started here, but it's adopted in 2005. See if I have anything else to talk about here.
I don't, but is there cross-examination?
Again, just a few, Madam Examiner. Mr. Hickok, did I understand you correctly that it's the county's position that wetland E is the only wetland that matters for purposes of this SDAP analysis?
This particular phase of the project, we have wetland E that is the adjacent wetland nearby, I believe.
Do you believe that wetlands G, F, and H might potentially be impacted by this road or impact this road themselves?
Oh, wetland G. Yeah, so here's wetland G is a category 4 wetland requiring a 40-foot buffer, and it does have the stream outlet coming into wetland G, and wetland G's buffer requirement is 40 feet. So, and then wetland I, which is upstream on the fish type stream, again, is a category 4 wetland requiring a 40-foot buffer. It's not in the prism of the roadway.
So then the county's process for analyzing wetland impacts is if neither the wetland nor the buffer touches the road, there's no need to analyze the impacts for that wetland.
In review of the final supplemental environmental impact statement, and going through the hearing, being the environmental reviewer for that particular part of the project, and also seeing the design and everything that was provided, all of the technical documents, the wetland report, the mitigation report, and seeing that everything matches up and we're getting mitigation as we had asked for that particular project, it all meets and matches what was originally asked for in that revised conditional use permit.
Do you dispute any of Dr. Cook's testimony that the mitigation plan provided in those documents you referenced is less thorough than the mitigation plan sample that she put up on the board?
I don't dispute that.
Is it the county's position that it's sufficient just to file the reports that Title 12 asks for? There's no analysis of the facts within those reports.
I'm not a Title 12 specialist, so I can't really answer that.
The geotech report that you mentioned, was there any field mapping conducted for the soils analyzed in that report?
I believe so.
Or perhaps did they just rely on the county level soil survey? Do you understand what I mean by field mapping?
I believe that's included. Okay. You might ask the geotech reporter, the person who wrote the geotech report, but I do remember seeing that.
Okay. With regards to your testimony on aquifer recharge,
yes.
Is it the county's position that roadways are not a concern for purposes of aquifer recharge analysis?
Roadways are not one of the analyzing factors for new roadways or existing roadways in aquifer recharge review.
And is your basis for that belief the fact that roadways aren't listed in Title 19?
The critical area ordinance. I can only review what's in a critical area ordinance in relation to my review.
Because the critical area ordinance doesn't list roadways as an aquifer recharge concern, you do not analyze roadways as an aquifer recharge concern. Is that correct?
That would be a good summary, yes.
Okay. Do you do any of the analysis under Title 12 for the county?
No.
Okay. No further questions.
And the redirect?
The one question that to respond to Dr. Cook's comment about wetland E and the buffer, do you want to speak to the process of how the county reviewed that buffer when you looked at it?
Well, what we looked at is from the original determination that had been made in the revised conditional use permit from 2015, and just made sure that the roadway and prism and the buffer restoration area was matching those particular situations, and everything did match.
Thank you. Thank you. The county has nothing further.
Okay. Anything further from the appellant?
No.
Okay. Those were your only two witnesses, I think, from GC.
Yeah.
Okay. Did the applicant have witnesses?
We have three witnesses.
Okay.
Four. First witness I'd like to call is Jeremy Downs. I've handed Jeremy Downs two documents from
the... Let me swear him in first, and then we'll... Can you state your name for the record, Mr. Downs?
Jeremy Downs.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, go ahead.
I handed him two documents for the record. One is UTF-16, and the second is UTF-17. These are both habitat assessments. And what?
Thank you. So, as I mentioned, my name is Jeremy Downs, principal scientist and environmental planner for Soundview Consultants. Soundview Consultants is approximately a 20-person firm made up of environmental professionals, including a number of professional wetland scientists, fisheries biologists, wildlife biologists, environmental planners, landscape architects. Within this project, we've looked at this site with quite a few of our staff on a number of occasions throughout many years at this point, with the high level of scrutiny that came in under the SEIS and with some of these other factors. We've been out there many times. In fact, we've probably been out there, I'd say, at least 20 times in all factors of the season, so not just in a winter inspection. We've been there quite a bit. The scientists that have gone out and looked at this culminate with about 165 years of experience. This has not been some fly-by-night operation. This is a very thorough review. Some of the scientists, for instance, one of the professional scientists that did a lot of the work on this with me, teaches wetland delineation courses until he took a job as a senior scientist at the Corps of Engineers. Other people that have looked at this, a professional wetland scientist that, like Sarah, is also active with the Society of Wetland Scientists, is actually on their board as I believe their chair for professional wetland scientist certifications. And she's a former Kitsap County biologist. So this has been reviewed at a very high level. It's also been scrutinized at a very high level along the way. We've had inspections out there multiple times, open inspections. It's been looked at by the tribe. It's been looked at by DFW. It's been looked at by the county on numerous occasions. So I just want to get that out front, is that this has been reviewed. One of my biggest concerns as we look through this and we're discussing this is we first came into this, the first exercise we went in this hearing, was whether or not we're reopening SEPA and whether or not we have another crack at the SEIS. And I think that's important to look at because many of the comments that we've seen here are not code-related, they're professional opinion-related type items specific to what was addressed in the SEIS originally. So, for instance, when we look at the wetland characterizations, the wetland wetland hydrology, when we look at the ratings, all of that was settled very clearly in the SEIS. I believe Ms. Cook did confirm that as part of her review, she did in fact read our reports, including the one that was used for the SEIS. She also did state that she reviewed the SEIS itself in the examiner's decision. Within that decision, and I think this is important right now, just to carefully understand what are we looking at right now. That decision did analyze what the wetland ratings were. If you look in the findings, if you look in the conclusions, for instance, under finding 21 and finding 26, these items are addressed. In the conclusions, it does note that the habitat management plan was completed under conclusion number 5. And then it goes into quite a bit of extent under the negotiated decision between all parties of what the mitigation would be. Conclusion number 142 outlines what will happen with the wetland buffers in detail. It actually forms the backbone of the mitigation plans. I did take a little bit of umbrage with the fact that the statements that we did not provide a mitigation plan. Further, when you look at our reports, if you actually review our report that that Ms. Cook testified that she had reviewed from that era, we do go into detail on specifically areas that she cited that were not addressed. For instance, she does note that there was no detail as far as the actual quantification of impacts. Those are in section 5.6.3. She does state that there was very little information as far as what would be done for plantings and things like that. It was all very carefully detailed. Her comments in regards to the level of detail necessary in a mitigation plan are of personal opinion, not of code, not matters of code. And I think that's important to note. You know, she does talk a little bit about there's threats and comments like an old boys network and any Tom, Dick, or Harry can go do this work. I don't think that's true. First of all, I think it's a little bit inflammatory, but in addition to that, the code does outline what a professional must have as qualifications to operate and do the studies that are required. So it is actually a code requirement, and it's in there. And this is the same not just for wetlands, but for fish and wildlife and for other factors of the critical areas ordinance. I would also note, as you go through this, and you look at all of those items that were there, this is a very simple mitigation exercise. The wetlands were determined to be Category 3. They were determined to have 110-foot buffer under the SEIS for the road. The road alignment was looked at and all the mitigation alternatives and sequencing. It was determined to be the only feasible location. The stream crossings, the hydrology patterns, and everything were challenged and addressed in the SEIS. All of that has been reviewed. So the compliance at this point is much more simplistic within the critical areas ordinance. As Mr. Heacock testified to, he didn't have an open ability to come in and bring in broad, you know, conjecture type comments or professional opinions that are outside of the code. So I think that's all very important to look at. I would also note that in challenges of what was been looked at, as was noted or will be noted, Ms. Cook was given an opportunity to go out there. We have representatives out there waiting for her. That was before the SEIS hearing. There has been no other attempt since that time. We have had a dozen qualified scientists look at this site, none of which are challenging our work. So it's important to keep that in mind. You cannot look at a wetland rating without looking at the site and come up with any kind of viable challenge or viable determination or challenge to determinations. I think that's important as well. In fact, I think that creates a lot of the fodder for what we're seeing in Ms. Cook's report and her testimony. It's easy to speculate. It's easy to challenge other people's work when you're just throwing mud at the wall and seeing what'll stick. I would add, when you look at Ms. Cook's review, it does not take into consideration that most of these items were vested under the SEIS. The wetland ratings were redetermined and fixed at that time. The buffers were determined and fixed at that time. The mitigation was determined and fixed at that time. I would add that in our design of the project as it stands now, we did look at it under more current methodology, and we did apply a conservative buffer that extends beyond what was provided for in the SEIS. We provided additional protections above and beyond the code, above and beyond the SEIS. So I really feel that's all important. I would add, too, that in Ms. Cook's report, as she goes through this thing and picks our report apart, calls us out for doing winter studies, you know, just really kind of looks at a lot of different things. It is very clear in the studies that she cites that she reviewed that we did not just do a winter study. If you look at her methodology under either report, it cites multiple site investigations over seasonal periods of time. It does not state that we made one inspection during the middle of winter. I think that's really important because that's hard to miss. That was in the methodology, it's crystal clear. It's also pointed on dates on her data forms and things like that. So while there might be a specific date on a specific form that she honed in on, I think it's disingenuous. to call out those studies. When you look at that in its greater context, there are major flaws within the entire Cook study and testimony. First of all, they're off the mark on what's to code. They're off the mark on what's actually being looked at, what methodology, and they're off the mark of fact.
Ready for the director?
No further direct.
Okay.
I do have a few questions for you, Mr. Downs. During your site visits, were you ever out there in the winter during a 100-year storm event?
No. The frequency would require me to be very old.
Well, not necessarily, or very unlucky. Were you out there during a back-to-back storm event?
I would have to go back and look at the precipitation data at the time, but I think it's fair to say with the weather anomalies we've had over the last few years that, yes, we have seen the site at greater than normal precipitation events.
Were you here in the examination room when Dr. Cook presented her sample mitigation plan?
Yes.
Did you submit something along that template as part of any of your various reports?
Frankly, that's the first time I've seen a form like that. And our firm does not do a small amount of work in this field. Last year alone, we had 489 intakes in the wetland field as far as projects. We obviously didn't take them all on, but we're working on approximately 200 to 300 projects at any given time across the region. We oversee a lot of mitigation plans.
So
and her outline is not anything I've seen before.
So does the report that you did submit follow the document outline for mitigation reports developed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Washington State Department of Ecology in their best available science documents?
I'm going to answer that with a statement to start, and that is referencing back to Ms. Cook's testimony. She provided a lot of testimony in the realm of compensatory wetland mitigation, which is in the realm of direct impacts to wetlands. For instance, she talked about compensatory mitigation and ratios. She talked about this is all in the context of a fill. In other words, it's in the context of a direct impact to a wetland, not to an indirect impact to a wetland buffer. In the case here, what we have is a buffer intrusion, not a wetland fill. The standards are not the same. They're not required to be at the same highest level that Mr. Cook is outlining as if this was, as if we were driving, putting the road through the wetland.
My question, sir, was about the report that you submitted. And again, the question was, does your report follow the document outline for the mitigation reports developed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the Washington State Department of Ecology in their best available science documents?
Well, first of all, as I stated just a moment ago, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers standards are for actual wetland fills. They're not for buffer intrusions. The Corps of Engineers does not have jurisdiction over that matter.
Does the DOE part discuss buffers?
To some extent, yes.
And does your, I mean, I hate to ask the question a third time, but you won't answer. Does their report, does your report follow the document outline for mitigation reports developed by the Washington State Department of Ecology in their best available science documents? Yes or no?
I would say yes. It's a guidance document. We did not hit every dot and every T that I expect Ms. Cook is going to be testifying to, but we hit the parts that were required under the critical errors ordinance by this county.
Thank you. Did I understand you correctly that in addition to the analysis you did as part of the SEIS, you also did analysis for this project that post-dated the SEIS?
Can you please restate that question?
Did you do any reports after the SEIS?
Yes.
No further questions.
Any further redirect?
Did you prepare a habitat management plan for the project?
Yes.
Did you evaluate streams as part of that report?
Yes.
Did you perform a code analysis in that report that analyzed Kitsap County code applicable?
Yes.
you evaluate the mitigation sequencing in the report?
Yes, and I would add that that was also evaluated by Adelson and was brought up as part of the overall SEIS.
And did you assess the impact associated with the in the report?
Yes.
Did you address the drainage and buffer crossings in your report?
Yes.
Did you evaluate a mitigation strategy in your report?
Yes.
Did you provide mitigation specifications in your report?
Yes.
Do you believe that your mitigation specifications were satisfactory and were they approved by the county?
Yes and yes.
Does it include buffer soils?
Yes.
Does it include erosion control and pollution prevention?
Yes.
Does it include plant scheduling, species and density?
Yes.
And the location?
Yes.
And these are recommendations by you in the report?
Yes.
Does it discuss replacing and distributing areas?
Yes.
Does it discuss plant and materials and insulation?
Yes.
Is that all common within a habitat management plan?
Actually, I would say that exceeds a habitat management plan that's going into the realm of wetland mitigation plans, especially in the non-compensatory type that we're looking at here.
Does it discuss product handling, delivery, and storage?
Yes.
Does it discuss the preparation and installation of plant materials?
Yes.
Does it discuss optional temporary irrigation methods?
Yes.
And these are the issues that were indicated by Dr. Cook that were not adequately evaluated?
She threw a lot more conjecture than detail.
And did Kitsap County accept your report?
Yes.
Is that report the report that's included in the SEIS?
Yes.
I have no further direct.
Thank you.
I would like to call Brett Allen.
Mr. Allen, your name for the record?
Brett, excuse me, Brett Allen.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes.
Thank you.
I've handed Mr. Allen three exhibits. Exhibit DC-9, which is the Construction Stormwater Pollution and Prevention Plan. Exhibit DC-11, which is also UTF-24, which is the approved site plans. And revised drainage plan dated 9/2017, which is UTF-19. Mr. Allen, would you state your profession?
I'm a civil engineer.
And how long have you been a civil engineer?
Professionally for 17 years.
And the company name is?
Contour Engineering, LLC.
And did you prepare the reports that were just handed to you, the drainage plan, the
pollution prevention plan and the site plans associated with this SDAP?
Yes.
And would you explain to us the work that you did?
So we prepared the overall site plan and drainage plan that followed the SEIS route. Through that process, we developed a drainage plan that is outlined in the drainage report dated 9/27/17, and is the latest submitted plan. I have to note that Dr. Cook, when she was referencing our report, she was referring back to our preliminary reports back in 2015, which our 2017 reports are more in detail and with what was approved by Kitsap County. So along with this drainage report, and I'll get to the detail of the drainage report later, we also, as is common or as is required practice, we produced a construction stormwater pollution prevention plan that is for both county review and county requirements, as well as Department of Ecology requirements when applying for an MPDS permit for stormwater discharge. So in the stormwater plan, in the drainage plan, we have to take into consideration all the upstream and downstream conditions as was outlined in the preliminary reports and the final report. There was a couple of questions that were brought up in regards to our not taking into account geotechnical information in the drainage report. It's clearly outlined, and in Appendix B, I think Jennifer Lawrence stated in her testimony that the geotechnical report was included in Appendix B of our drainage report. So it was reviewed and was accounted by all of the disciplines that worked on this project. In regards to there was a question regarding the culverts, how they were analyzed, and the culverts on the road were analyzed for the 100-year stormwater or rainfall event in the Santa Barbara unit method. And that 100-year event, like Jeremy Downs said, it's supposed to only happen every 100 years. As far as there was a question about if we analyze multiple events, we don't have to analyze for 100 or for two multiple events, because usually the 100-year event is a one-time event that occurs and it is the peak event for a short period of time. When the multiple events occur, there'll be lower flows, and we have already over-designed for that. So we have met the requirements and of Kitsap County in that manner. In our design for the road, we provided the 18-inch culverts that cross the road that meet the 100-year stormwater event, and those 18-inch culverts should allow for the drainage to pass through. The question about there was some question or comment, I don't really know what he was getting at with washouts, whether we analyze for washouts. We don't analyze for washouts. We analyze and design so it doesn't wash out. And that's what our drainage plan is designed to do, is to convey the water to the county code. And that's about it on as far as the issues that came up in regards to my civil engineering plans and reports.
No more redirect.
Mr. Allen, I just have a couple of questions. Did I understand you correctly that you saw no need to analyze back-to-back 100-year events?
No. That would be 200-year events.
Because they only happen every once every 100 years, right?
Right.
In the last 5 years.
Wait a minute. Let me go back. Back-to-back, you only have to analyze it once.
Right.
Because if you've met the capacity of 100-year once, you've met it twice.
In the last 5 years, how many 100-year storm events have occurred in Washington State?
I can't answer that.
Did I understand your testimony correctly?
And let me go back. There's 100-year event in the state of Washington. Rainfall distribution is different around the state. So there could be a 100-year event in eastern Washington and not one on western Washington. We don't hit it all at once.
In the last 5 years, how many 100-year storm events have occurred in Kitsap County?
I can't answer that question.
Do I understand your testimony correctly that you do not consider the impacts of washouts because you designed the road such that washouts won't happen in the first place?
That is right.
No further questions.
Redirect.
Go ahead.
Mr. Allen, will you describe the downstream analysis that was performed and what the criteria was that was met?
So the downstream analysis was originally done in the preliminary storm drainage report that was submitted in the SEIS. The downstream analysis was performed to meet the Kitsap County manual, look for flooding problems and or other drainage problems that this project could affect. And we performed, staff of mine, along with myself, performed walkthroughs of the site and the downstream, looked at all available information that was available on the downstream for 1/4 mile.
And is that determined to be a level one review?
That is correct.
And if you would have found significant additional problems as you did the downstream analysis, what would have been the next step?
We would have bumped it up to a quantitative analysis, which is level two, and that would have been a higher detailed analysis with quantifying flows, determining what the issue is. But you first have to determine that there's an issue such as flooding or a capacity issue.
And in this particular case, you performed the level one analysis and did not determine any impact that would warrant moving to a level two, correct?
That is correct.
And did the county accept that evaluation as well?
They did.
No further questions.
No further cross.
Thank you. You're done for right now.
At this time, I would like to call up Brad Bickerstaff.
Mr. Bickerstaff, let me swear you in. What's your name for the record?
Brad Bickerstaff.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
I do.
Thank you.
Excuse me, can I make one correction from mm-hmm. the prior expert? The document that I referred to as UTF-19 mm-hmm. was actually UTF-20. And I'm handing to Mr. Bickerstaff what is DCD-7. Mr. Bickerstaff, can you describe for us your expertise and the company you work for and how long you've been working for that company?
My expertise is I'm a licensed geologist in the state of Washington, licensed hydrogeologist, and a licensed engineering geologist. I'm also a Department of Natural Resources qualified expert for slope stability and forest practices in the state of Washington. And I started Geo Resources in 1995, and I've been doing this a long time. I won't say how long.
And Mr. Bickerstaff, could you explain to us the report that you prepared in May of 2017 with regard to the geology and hydrology?
Yes. So I've been to the site, like Mr. Downs, probably 20 times or more. We started on this project looking at the mineral resources at the site and then have worked all the way through to where we are now. This specific report, prepared May 25th, 2017, included field work by myself and staff, and we looked at the specific road alignment in this section. That analysis included site reconnaissance, not just in the road area, but in the surrounding area. The road section is a little under 1 acre. We looked at an area that was probably more like 8 to 10 acres. It also included digging exploration test pits, both on the alignment. There were 4 test pits dug in that area, but also test pits that were dug outside of that. And maybe I'll just to give you an idea, that's the location of the test pits relative. So the
there's the pit here,
and the alignment, yeah, is right in that area.
In this area.
Just to give you a general idea.
How many test pits did you dig within the roadway?
There were 4 test pits within the roadway.
And the total?
The total in this particular area is approximately 14 test pits, actually more than that, about 18. As part of our analysis, we utilize the available geologic information, both, you know, reports for the state level all the way down to previous work that we had done on the project, hydrogeologic information, including water wells in the area. As far as the site soils, as previously mentioned, there are no Ragnar soils within the project site itself. They do occur further west. And any soil has the potential for erosion given either water velocity or slope, which can induce velocity. And because of that, we work with the civil engineers very diligently to plan and prepare documents that will provide adequate mitigation for the erosion potential. And then during the project, there's a continuous maintenance of that with monitoring. There'll be a CECL on the project, which will monitor the erosion conditions both on a regular basis, but also after significant storm events.
Would you define for the hearing examiner what a CECL is?
Thank you.
A CECL is a certified erosion control specialist, basically. Our evaluation also looked at the geologic conditions, and relative to the hydrogeology and the discussions of recharge in this area, even though it is mapped as a recharge area, during the explorations, we encountered soils that were basically impermeable at depths of anywhere from 1 foot to 4 feet below the ground surface, which would indicate that there's going to be very minimal recharge to the deeper aquifer, which occurs in this area at about 60 to 80 feet below the ground surface. But as also indicated, the requirement for recharge is maintained by providing management of the stormwater. So we'll utilize dispersion systems, which will closely match the pre-existing conditions. And it might be important to note that we've already built one road in this area, and there's been no reports or indications of any problems with either erosion or stormwater management that have been brought to our attention or noted on site by the staff.
That's on the same site?
It's in the same project area, you know, outside of this new alignment.
Did you evaluate landslide mitigation measures?
Yes.
Was that in association with this SDAP roadway or other aspects of the project that you were evaluating?
Well, it was primarily with other aspects, but we always look at the landslide issues specifically for any project.
And did you evaluate the seismic impacts and potential seismic mitigation hazards? Excuse me, hazards.
Yes, that was reviewed as well.
Okay. And is that contained within the report?
I'm not sure it's not in this specific report. It was in our previous report.
In the previous report?
Yes.
And did you suggest any mitigation measures associated with seismic activity?
No, other than standard of practice within the civil engineering field.
Did you evaluate the site soils? We discussed you did the test pits. Once you did the test pits, did you have the soil samples analyzed?
Yes, we did. We did grain size analysis of the soils. And we also looked at, as we were digging the test pits, the soil horizons that were encountered, and verified that the soil maps in this area are generally accurate. And in our report, we actually included what the current soils maps are rather than the versions that are used in the old books. Not that they're that much different, but this is the current technology that's available online.
So is it your contention that this map is more up-to-date than the map that Dr. Cook presented?
Well, it's more up-to-date than the original 1970s soils books, but in a lot of cases, they're real similar.
And just one more with regard to the soil. When you've had that analyzed by the laboratory, what comes back from the laboratory?
You get a grain size analysis table, which is included in the back of the report.
And that's an exhibit to your report?
Yes.
Based on your site visits and evaluations, what were your conclusions?
Oh, that the site is easily buildable relative to the proposed road construction.
Did you make a determination that based upon your soil and subsurface investigations, infiltration would not be an option for this property?
Correct.
Did you also recommend that disbursement BMPs be adopted and utilized in this project?
Yes, those that are currently approved by Kitsap County.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Biggerstaff, did I understand you right that you had discovered the soil was impermeable down at around a depth of 1 to 4 feet?
Well, at different test pits, right. Elevations, yes.
And where is that data, the raw data?
It's in the back of the report.
Which report?
The May 25th, 2017 report, the grain size analysis.
And was that data provided to the county?
Yes.
No further questions.
No. Thank you. I believe that was your last witness.
That will be our last witness.
Okay.
Madam Examiner, we would like to put Dr. Cook back on the stand to reply to some of the testimony that's been given about her testimony.
Okay. Dr. Cook, I don't need to swear you in again. You remain under oath, though.
I am.
All right. Dr. Cook, do you have any response to the factual statements that Mr. Downs made during his testimony?
Yes, I do.
Lay it on us.
All right. So let's see. A lot of notes here.
First, pertaining to the report information that was provided, my response and the statement that my request for a more detailed report was, how was it phrased, personal, sorry, is that my phone? No. Was based on personal preference, not requirement. Although each county code, and we've seen that in the Title 12, has specific requirements for what that particular county asks for, there is a guideline that has been produced by the Washington State Department of Ecology with oversight with the Army Corps of Engineers and the Environmental Protection Agency that is a best available science document that lays out an outline and the components required for both wetland delineation reports and wetland mitigation reports. And the sample that I provided is based directly on that outline. That's where I got it from. I didn't just generate it out of thin air. And when I teach classes in wetland mitigation, and I have taught those for the Washington State Department of Ecology through the Coastal Training Program, Portland State University, and the Evergreen State College, as well as through the Wetland Training Institute, which also trains in delineation methodology, I also utilize that outline. It is not something I generated, nor is it my personal preference. Second is they went through a long list of what was provided in the wildlife habitat management plan that they produced. And, you know, yes, I provided that. Yes, I provided that. But still would like to get back to what my comments were, which was there wasn't sufficient detail for the county to be able to apply any criteria as to whether or not, if they, that's all they ever submit, there is no way to go back and determine if their planting is successful because there's no plant numbers, there is no locations as to where those plants are to go in, and there's no performance standards. And the performance standards are something that's absolutely specific in the best management practices. If you're going to provide a mitigation plan, the performance standards need to be quantifiable things that you measure in the field so that when all is said and done, the agency that's in charge can go out and say, yes, you fulfilled the criteria that we placed on you. And so a sample performance standard would be, weed aerial cover can't exceed 15%. So you go out and you look at a prescribed area and you see how much percent cover in the overall area is weeds, and if it exceeds 15%, then you didn't satisfy that performance criteria. Usually one of the performance criteria is for the first year mortality. You can't exceed more than 20% plant mortality, and that's usually based on the contractor having to resupply them. If their plants die, they have to replant them. After that, then you usually switch to aerial cover. And usually a performance standard is by year three, you have to have 60% cover in the forested class if that's the kind of community that you have. So these are quantifiable things. And without that, county has no way to hold you to anything. You can't say, I planted and there's plants there, but, you know, did you achieve a nice consistent community? Is there a lot of diversity in it, or is it all one species? You know, things like that. So that's not provided. And that was one of my key things that. And I also might add that most of the rest of the information that was provided in that report is what we call boilerplate, which is you keep it on your computer and you apply it to virtually every project that you do, and then you're supposed to tweak it to the individual characteristics of your particular project, but without details on your own particular project, which this report was, you know, I'm contending had very little specific for this project. It's just boiler material. So it's pretty easy to do that. And yes, they provided specifications, which is this is how deep you dig a pit to plant a plant, but that's pretty much provided for every single project that we do. So there really wasn't anything, very little that was specific to this project. So, although,
Dr. Cook, if I may, and as you make this critique of Mr. Downs's testimony and report, are you referring only to the stuff that came in before the SEIS, or does this critique also include stuff that post-dated that?
No, this is for the new wildlife and habitat management plan produced in 2017.
Okay, which and the SEIS was what year?
2015.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the point I'm making, is that I'm not disputing that they provided a lot of detail about general stuff, but in terms of details for this project and ways to determine if the project is in fact fulfilling the mitigation requirements and compensating for the proposed impacts. That's what I'm arguing. And the requirements do not just pertain to wetlands. They pertain to report formats for buffers. Again, he was correct in that the Army Corps of Engineers does not have jurisdiction over buffers, but the Department of Ecology does still, and that the best available science document still does outline the same requirements in terms of performance standards and what you're supposed to require for buffer mitigation plans. Because again, why should any agency let you impact things and supposedly mitigate if they have no way to calculate if you have in fact fulfilled those requirements? And as far as the wetland rating goes, you know, the comment about throwing comments and hoping on anything you could think of and then hoping something sticks, that's not at all what I was doing. I actually went into a great detail, especially for Wetland E and a couple of the others, on how I had scored the wetland rating plan and what I utilized. And you know, they were 1 point away from being a Category 3 to a Category 2. And I went down through the wetland rating form and showed exactly what I was utilizing between the information they did not provide, which is a required part of doing the rating, which is to get an aerial photograph and draw 1 kilometer circumference on it, and then both map the available connected habitat and map the different plant communities, et cetera. That wasn't done, but I did it. And then I showed how I could, just using their own data sheets and how they scored with this additional information, easily come up with 1 point on more than one of the questions. So I detailed all that so you can see. So I wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything that I needed to go out to the field for. And again, you know, no one's disputing it. It is much better to do the rating in the field. But again, I was just using their scores with this additional information. And so I provided that information, which you have from my report from March. None of this is new information. Then there was a question on the SWIP information, the Surface Water Management Protection Plan. The comment was that we provided detailed analysis in this, the SWIP plan. If you actually look at the SWIP, a large portion of it is, again, the same boiler that is used, and so there's a 1-inch high paragraph on most of the different sections of the SWIP, which again, you have sample outlines that most of the companies utilize. So there, so much of it is non-specific to this project. And one of the things that one of the questions that he was asked was, how often do 100-year storm events occur in this day and age? Well, it's one of the reasons that the scientists are overwhelmingly agreeing on that climate change is occurring, because when I first started this work 35 years ago, we would have a 100-year storm event maybe once every 5 to 10 years. And that's when, you know, there's flooding and people lose their houses and the houses fall off the cliffs here. We've had many years in the last 10 years where we've had not just one a year, but more than one a year. And then in the summers, we have a drought for, well, what did we go last year? 68 days or something where there was no precipitation whatsoever, which is also not common to this part of the world.
I don't normally.
So we
don't normally object, but I object. This is all SEPA and SEIS issues. This has nothing to do with the permit for the SDAP.
Just keep it focused on them.
Okay. So anyway, we're having a lot of back-to-back storm events, which is my original issue, was that that has not been evaluated, and he specifically said he did not evaluate that. We have very high volume storm events that do occur back to back, and it's not accurate to say that once you've modeled one of them, you've modeled all of them, because when they occur back to back, and I should have brought a hydrograph, but if you have the storm event occur and you have rising in storm elevations in streams, etc., and then the water draws down, and then you have the next one. Well, in back-to-back events, you don't have that drawing down, so the storage capacity in your system is well exceeded on what it would be, because you already have maximized the capacity for storage in the system.
Dr. Cook, would that also tend to enlarge the wetlands themselves, something like that?
Well, only on a temporary basis. It wouldn't affect their jurisdictional boundaries. But from a stormwater management perspective, yes, it does matter. Let's see. Also go back to what was in the wildlife report. He said he examined the streams, but there is virtually no stream characterization data provided. And I believe, I could be wrong on this, but that the stream ratings were already provided by the county, so I don't think they provided those stream ratings, although they could have, but there's no stream characterization data. And the data sheets at the back of that report for the new wetlands that they found that post-dated the SEIS, so wetland, I believe it's wetland M, and there's one other one, the data sheets didn't even acknowledge that it was, which data sheet it was. So to call me disingenuous when I was commenting on the detail of the data sheets is not exactly accurate, because I couldn't backtrack as to which data sheets in the appendices went with which wetlands. And a section township range was provided, but who wants to sit there and having been a reviewer myself, nobody's going to sit there and try to pull up a section township range map to figure out which goes with which wetland. You just say, this is for wetland M, or this is for wetland E. That's how you do it. I don't understand. And that was in my original comments and their responses to my original comments. So, all right, and then let's see. In terms of the availability of the soils data, I'm very glad to know that they map the soils. I'm very, very glad to know that data exists, but I did not find it in any appendices. And in terms of the new map versus the old map, I was just using the map, the soils map that was provided in the wildlife report. I don't use those anymore. In fact, I've donated them to the Center for Urban Hort. I go online and get the data. So the map that I normally would have used would have been the same one that they used in the SWIP, but I was just using theirs because we're not here to do new work. and that's supposed to be provided by then. I'm just here to review the work that was done. Okay, so, and then one last thing in terms of the erodibility. The comment that any soil will erode with enough water is absolutely accurate. But in the absence of water or in the presence of just a small rainfall, when you've got glacial terrain, you have gravelly sands in general. And there is no cohesion in the particles of gravelly sands. You have any water and they wash out. Whereas if you've got a fine silt or a clay in the soil matrix, they do hold together. And on top of that, when you're clearing an area of the vegetation, when you have these already highly erodible soils, vegetation, that's why we hydroseed banks when we clear cut them. The vegetation, the roots and the veg itself holds the soil in place. So when you're clearing for a road, you're creating a condition that absolutely exacerbates any erosive properties that your soils have. So you need to remember all of this is going on, and that was not what was discussed in their expert witness testimony.
And Dr. Cook, I have just one last question for you. Do you agree with Mr. Hickok's testimony that for purposes of performing the various analyses required by the Kitsap Land Use Code, wetland E is the only wetland that is relevant to this SDAP road?
No, I don't. I mean, only considering those whose buffer is within the footprint of a road, is that's not the impact area. So that may be in code, but that's not the reality of on the ground conditions.
Thank you, Dr. Cook. Unless you have anything else, I have no more questions.
Rebuttal?
Yes, go ahead.
Dr. Cook, this list of items that you think should be included in the mitigation plan to enhance it, have you reviewed the Kitsap County Code with regard to mitigation requirements?
Yes, I have.
And is any of that specifically required in the code?
The county code does require best available science. And that's how we always get back to these Department of Ecology documents and best available science, is that all codes in the state do mention that there is a necessity to follow best available science.
And are your suggestions listed anywhere in best available science, best management practices?
They're not my suggestions. They are the best available science in the documents provided by the Department of Ecology.
And are any of these items included?
They're all included. I didn't generate them. They came from the best available science document.
Can you cite those for us?
Yes, I can. Not by memory. I've got them in a reference sheet. I'd have to pull them off my computer. But there's a whole series of best available science documents from the Department of Ecology.
No further questions.
I will provide that.
Yeah, no further questions, Madam Examiner. If you feel the need to see that Department of Ecology does indeed have best management practices and best available science documents, we're happy to provide them.
I don't have a...
I trust that the Department of Ecology does have such, so no, I don't.
I'll provide it. It's not a problem.
Okay.
I can't cite references. There's hundreds out there, so.
Thank you.
Understood. Thank you, Dr. Cook. Thank you.
Rebuttal witness?
Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to recall Jeremy Downs to the stand.
Mr. Downs, you remain under oath.
Thank you.
Mr. Downs, will you please limit your response to rebuttal to what Dr. Cook has just presented?
Absolutely. I'll try to distill it down here. First off, on the relevant wetlands question, two of the items that Ms. Cook really goes into in her report, and she just went into again her wetlands M and N, they were added into our more current report because at the time we were asked not only to look at the road, but we were also asked to look at other parts of the site that were not part of the SEIS. And they were not part of the road project. They're part of other mining activities.
Mr. Downs, how far from the SEA site is wetland M and N?
Approximately 900 to, I believe, 1,500 feet away. And they're upslope. They would be completely unaffected by this project. I would also add that it was hard to distill down if this is comments specific to M&N or if this is comments to overall reports or what, but all of our data sheets do have detailed longitude and latitude data. Anybody can look up the information and get those locations. It takes a little effort, but it was available in the report. I would have to go back through and look at our report in every detail to make sure that this is not a completely factual statement, but I would believe that her statement that these were not cited as reference to wetlands is not accurate either. I remember in preparation for this last night, I seen a lot of data sheets that had reference, wetland references on them. Upland data plots that may not have a wetland may not have a reference, but that has nothing to do with the wetland. That has to do with clearing certain parts of the site. So in relevance of wetland E versus the other G, H, and I would agree that I believe it's G, H, and I, the smaller wetlands to the northwest. Those wetlands are across from the stream and in another drainage. So they're in another sub-watershed. Those wetlands are not...
G, H, and F, I think. But...
Yes, thank you, yeah. F. So those wetlands, even Ms. Cook, in her own document states that she has no further comments as far as the rating of those goes. So those ratings go unchallenged. And once again, I'd reiterate SEIS. These were already sorted out in the SEIS. As such, we're nowhere near those wetlands with this proposal. In fact, we're the water, unless it's magical, can't get over there. It would have to go up through one stream into another stream upslope. Not going to happen. So I think it's appropriate that Mr. Hecox's statement that the focus was on wetland E, that's where the buffer impacts occurred, and that's what we analyzed, and that's what we cleared in the SEIS to begin with. As far as her comments regarding the code, review the Kitsap County Code, you'll find that performance standards are not a requirement under code. And I understand she's going to take umbrage to that. And if I was drawing up a compensatory wetland mitigation plan, in other words, wetland impacts, wetland fill, I would have performance standards. This was about restoration with minimum densities, particular plant pallets. And basically, you have a road threading through an area that already has an existing road, existing impacts. And so you're putting down a new road surface and grading everything out to make it. There will be some vegetation clearing. And that vegetation had a clearing standard for wherever the clearing actually specifically happens on site within our clearing limits. And I'd reiterate that not all the clearing limits would likely be cleared. You would get plants replanted. If we were to apply plant quantities to that, we might be in an area where we have overspecced the number of plants for the amount of disturbance. In other words, if we said we're disturbing 12,000 square feet of wetland, because that's what's within the engineering, and they go out in the as-built situation and they only disturb 8,000 square feet of area, we would be overspecced by 50%. I think it's fair to leave it up to the person doing the restoration that you pick the appropriate plant quantity, not overplant, not underplant. That's what our specification does. I would also caution that our plan does very clearly outline that this planting action would be carried out in coordination with a professional biologist. So in other words, it has a requirement within the plan that they coordinate with us during planting to make sure it's carried out according to plan. So that's all part of the components that were actually evaluated in the SEIS, not in the SDAP. As far as our statements regarding BAS, I agree. Those documents exist. They do provide guidance. I just testified to them as what components are in them. There's no challenge there. But the best available science is, and I'll let Steve probably testify to how that interstitches with the code. We're here to review the code. The county is able to adopt what parts of that they wish under their critical areas updates. What the county did in their 2010 critical areas ordinance that were vested under here
was they adopted the components that they felt best at that time. That is the code that I believe that we're here to review and understand whether or not we meet. So, so I would reiterate that when referencing what she's talking about here is the 2006 document, joint agency document from state and federal agencies that outlines how to implement a critical areas ordinance and how to implement what should be in it. So, and we do use it as a guideline ourselves, but it is not a guideline that is hard, fast for every single project in every single way. As she mentioned, she cautioned against boilerplate. I would note that the information in our reports is not boilerplate. There is specificity in each and every section.
I have no further questions.
Excuse me, I do have a question real quick, Mr. Downs. You mentioned that your plan calls for a biologist to come and work with the project proponent on this mitigation. Is that right?
Yes.
And does the plan call for this to be an independent biologist or perhaps a county staff biologist?
I'd have to go back and look at it, but I believe it says a qualified biologist.
Who pays for that biologist to come out and do that?
The applicant.
No further questions.
Anything further?
Nothing further.
Okay. Any further rebuttal testimony? Are we done? Okay. All right. Does the parties have any desire for post-hearing briefing?
No, from the applicant.
No, the county. We would want to summarize in the closing, but I think that's sufficient.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. We forgot. Sorry about that. beautiful day out there. Would you all like to have a closing argument?
Madam Executive, I think we would like to submit a short written closing argument, if that's all right with you. And of course, we would open that up to the county of Yulin as well.
If they submit something, we'd like to.
It's we've heard so much today. It's a lot to a lot to chew on here on the spot. You know?
If they would submit very quickly in response, very quickly, I'm going to Scotland in 4 days. And I'll be gone for 2 weeks, and I'd like to have a chance to look at it and respond then.
I'm going to Spain. What are your travel dates? Maybe we can hang out. what are your travel dates?
I'm going to be leaving on the 3rd.
May 3rd and back?
May 15th.
Okay, I'm leaving May 5th and back May 13th, so it's fairly close.
So we could make arguments right now and close.
Yeah, right. Just because it is so fact and technical intensive. May 3rd, you say?
Yes, I'm in the middle of another arbitration, too, so I have very limited time, so my response will be very limited.
Today's Thursday, right? Yeah. You said you leave the 3rd. That's Thursday next week. What are your thoughts?
So we'd have basically a week to do it. I can get this done in a week.
Well, I think we don't have a week if we're going to review each other's responses.
Well, why don't we both?
And I guess there's a question too on whether the appellant submits a brief or you all. Seems to me it'd be helpful for me if you all submit something and then there's that you all respond to it, but it could be a joint as well.
Oh, I was thinking more along the lines of each of us does our own closing arguments, you know, and kind of
files them
simultaneously.
Form.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I would recommend that we limit the page on closing to one or two pages.
There's too much factual stuff to wade through. Can we do simultaneous closings so it's not like a back and forth, but call it 10 pages? I mean, we've been here
would object to that. I think we should make the arguments right now instead of asking for a 10-page written document to come in a week.
Well, we've been here for 6 hours. It's a lot to assimilate.
Which means we've covered it all.
Can I make a proposal that I don't know if you're willing to review at this point or kind of make a decision, but there's a lot of testimony that went to the Critical Areas Ordinance, Title 19, and that is completely off the table because they didn't cite to 19. Just 12. So I think that would limit a lot of, if we did writings, that would limit a lot of it. And so I don't think it's that factual.
Well, a lot of the testimony that does apply to critical areas, Title 19, also applies to Title 12, because Title 12 calls for, you know, an analysis of off-site water flow and drainage effects. So it's, you know, it's the same testimony. It does kind of wear more than one hat.
Certainly, I have no jurisdiction over Title 19.
Right.
And so to get to, I mean, there has been testimony that falls under critical areas, but it has, in order to, for this appeal, it has to travel somewhere under those three code sections.
Right.
So the
closing would be limited to the evidence provided with regard to those three items, 070, 080, and 090.
Those three code sections.
1210.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess we're down to, got some consensus. There will be a post-hearing submittal. It will be joint. There's a question, I guess, on the page limit.
He can write one or two pages, to, you know, just because the limit is 10 doesn't mean he has to write 10.
I'm inclined to allow up to 10. And I guess the question is, does this all do, the deadlines have been very fast for you all. Do you all want to go do all this before you leave for Scotland? I'm jealous about that.
I would definitely like to have a chance to have a few days to respond before I have to leave.
But my understanding is that we would be putting them in simultaneously. It wouldn't be a response.
If it's joint, there wouldn't be.
Yeah, that's right. It's your closing statement written down, my closing statement written down. We file them the same day.
I'm not in favor of that. That's up to your discretion. And I would rather just make closing statements right now rather than wait and come back with 10-page discourses from everybody. That's going to confuse the whole thing.
That would certainly be more efficient, but I think I am. It's not uncommon to have post-hearing kind of conclusions, so I am going to allow for that. And I know it's probably not perfect for, I guess, at least two people are traveling. I don't know. So then the question is, if it is a simultaneous, and I don't have a preference. I mean, if it's a simultaneous submittal, then to the party, is that it? Those are closing statements and how they're treated, or do we want to have, or is, no, okay. So it's just two joint submittals. Effectively, they're closing arguments, but in a written format, no more than 10 pages, and then deadline.
Second.
The fourth. I mean, and again, you know, there's nothing stopping Ulan from submitting its materials early if they want.
Well, today's Thursday, so I guess that technically there's Friday and like weekend, but yeah. And then you said day and second. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll compromise because we're doing the 10 pages, but we'll do, I guess, day in. So it'll be 5 p.m. May 2nd, electronic submittal to the hearing examiner clerk.
Okay.
Can you all live with that? But any?
Thank you.
Yes, that's fine, Madam Examiner. And as I understand it, it's just going to the clerk. You know, that way
well,
you then
please,
wants to put
yes,
it in
submit
early.
To the other parties.
So oh,
they,
also to the other
absolutely,
parties.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Consistent with the, I think, the past submissions, everyone's gotten a copy. So, yes, please email. An email is sufficient. And then the clerk will forward that on to me.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? Oh, I did have a question. So there was the ruling on SEPA, and I had mentioned that I would be revising that order. In the hearing examiner rules, I think technically my clock on that is, it provides, and it's the rules, not the code, but for Monday. And I assume there's no objection if I do the revised order with the at the same time as the decision. It may be, I don't know whether it would be a separate document or combined document. But
That's acceptable, no
okay.
problem.
We think that's
all right. So then just to recap, we've got written closing arguments. Those will come in on Wednesday, May 2nd by 5 p.m. to the hearing examiner clerk, and everybody serves each other. And then within 10 business days of that, that's when my decision and the order on jurisdiction, SEPA jurisdiction, will be issued. So I think that's it. Any last questions? Okay. Thank you all for meeting all the deadlines and all the effort you've put in. I know it's been a quick few weeks to get all this pulled together. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.